Hi, this is Melinda with Sex Gen. I am so excited to be here. I have Elizabeth Newsom. I saw on there Liz. Do you go by Liz?
I do.
Do you prefer Elizabeth?
Liz is okay, unless I'm in trouble.
Okay, Liz. I'm going to go with Liz then, because there's no trouble here. Yeah. I'm here with Liz, and she is a LCSW, you know, as LPCs, we always get those letters mixed up, but you're also a supervisor and you have a private practice in Richardson, Texas, which I found out, and I was like so excited to hear whenever I found you. And we, just so that the listeners know, we have not ever met before. I just came by and looked up and did some research, and I was like, oh, wait, this is the person I need to know. Like, this is a human doing. So she has actually had her private practice for over 10 years. And you have, I like that you use honesty, professional, and that you allow and you empower to make change. And I like that. I really do like that a lot.
Well, we're a practice full of social workers, and social workers' biggest thing, or well, at least when I was in grad school, forever and a day ago, you know, is we want to empower our clients, strength-based, you know, UT Arlington, woohoo, all about being strength-based. So, yeah, we empower.
We empower, and that's the best. And I like the feeling. Okay, so in one of, whenever y'all read this little blurb, I'm going to put it down below because I thought it was neat too. It says, I am a firm believer that we are not trapped ever. And I love that. And that's your line specifically, right? It really sounded, it did sound like it was like a voice that came from you. Yes. And so I'm going to let you tell a little bit about yourself, your gig, your private practice, what your focus is. And then of course I'm going to ask questions and see where we can go with it. So go ahead, jump on in.
All right. So like I said, I run Realistic Expectations. I started it almost 10 years ago, almost. Next year will be 10 years. So I started off just me, and about 4 years ago, I started hiring other social workers. And part of that was when I was, you know, cutting my teeth, there weren't any places for LMSWs really to do individual therapy. The best thing that we had was like inpatient hospitals, and there was like one or two practices at that time that offered supervision and they didn't offer supervision, but they would let a supervisee do therapy out of their practice. So I decided that I would only hire social workers. And so we hired two LMSWs. Well, we hired a few more, but two that stayed on, one moved out of state and then one across the Metroplex. But anyway, so we have our two supervisees, and then we have two other LCSWs on board as well. And the biggest things that we really try to focus on are we want to provide a safe place for LGBT plus individuals and the polyamorous and or non-monogamous and kinky people. Give them a safe place to get their therapy and not have to explain the differences in CBT. And I won't go into all the details unless you want me to on the therapeutic CBT versus the BDSM CBT. They don't have to spend their time explaining that. We know what that means. We know what a triad is, and we know what all of these different polyamorous things are. Relationship anarchy. I always think, I'm so stuck on acceptance. Every time I think RA, I think radical acceptance, but I mean relationship anarchy.
I know you read that. I know you listened to the one about Dr. Chef. I made her I'd make her stop and like explain everything because her definitions are so good. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, no, totally pick her brain anytime you can. Definitely. But let's see. So we started off just sort of working with kinky and poly and LGBT folks. But over the course of the last several years, we've started noticing a giant need for trauma work within these populations. So everybody but one therapist at my practice is EMDR trained. Two of us are working on certification. So let's see. That's kind of it. And I think
I was going to say that's really awesome that they are. I go next week and I'm out for the week to do my training because, you know, with the community, you just have to keep kind of, okay, cultivating that. What do I need? Because there are deficiencies that people overlook because they're just trying to survive and to not be shamed, you know? And yeah. So there's some skills and things that end up happening with that. So no, I think that's awesome.
Since you speak of shame, you know, one of the biggest reasons why I chose this as my specialization was one, when I worked in the hospital, it didn't seem like a lot of the clinicians in the hospital really had an understanding of LGBT populations, and they definitely did not understand non-monogamy and kink and were pathologizing a lot of it. You know, so there was that piece, but then even in my own personal life, I couldn't find a therapist that I could go see that understood any of those dynamics.
Yep.
You know, so be the change.
I think that that's what you have to do, you know, and that's, and healthy change, you know, because you can provide that safe space and you can provide that area where people can not have to explain, I have a lot of conversations that some people are like, would have to stop like every 15 seconds and explain something else, you know? And I think that it's good to have that flow and a safe space. So no, and I may ask you some questions because I think it's good. And I also think that it will be good to know that people go, oh, wait, I have a safe place that I can go. And like, she, you know, she gets it. Okay. So let's kind of jump in. Like that's your practice and your focus. Mm-hmm. Today we were going to talk a little bit about kink and BDSM and the community, LGBT, and incorporate kind of anything in that kind of jumps up. And, you know I'm really passionate about gender, so it's always really hard for me not to, in some way, talk about gender and like sexuality, because that's kind of one of those things. Like I wanted everybody to get to enjoy their body and their partners are romantically or whatever it is that they wanted, what type of connection they wanted or non-connection they wanted, you know, I want them to be happy with that space. And so, so anything that you throw in there, I'm fine with. I just want to start off here. A couple of the things that some people had asked about was communication and strengths and weaknesses with the community and how you work with clients to like find that middle ground. All that I ask is if we identify like what community are both communities, you know, and we'll kind of keep it to kink and BDSM for right now. And even though that's a huge umbrella anyway, but
what I was going to say is my very favorite populations to work with are kinky and non-monogamous people. Usually because if that is the path they have chosen in their life, especially if they want to do it in a healthy way, that means they're already wanting to do insightful work. That means that they are open to these kind of ideas, you know, and processing new things and addressing things. You know, so those are my ideal clients personally, but yay.
The conversation is awesome. So, you're like, oh, wait, we're really going to talk about this. Like, awesome.
Yes. You picked one of my favorite topics. Ultimately when it comes down to, you know, a lot of the, and if I reference, you know, polyamory and consensual non-monogamy at the same time, it's because some of these things, especially when you talk about communication, they're so similar. And it's, you know, if you're going to do something that is a little bit, quote, risky, you do have to be more communicative with the people around you. Even if it's a, hey, I need you to back up, you know, as simple as that. You know, being able to, appropriately convey what it is that you're wanting, what you're needing. But on those two, you got to think about what you want and need, first of all, to be able to communicate that. That's a big thing. Yeah. So a lot of the times before we even get to communicating with others, it's really about sitting down with yourself and looking at, like, what are you really okay with? And what are you really not okay with? And what do you need? And what don't you need? You know? So for instance, you know, I'm trying to think. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm so sorry. My electronics is not my friend right now.
Oh, that's been my week. I understand completely.
No, right.
Yeah, technology.
So I know, and turning stuff on and off, and it's just all over the place. So I apologize for that interruption.
So a lot of the times I will have people reach out to me, and, you know, they'll say, hey, you know, oh, well, okay. Right after 50 Shades of Grey came out, everybody and their dog wanted to be kinky, which, cool, good, totally.
Yeah,
I mean, play. Oh my
Safely.
God, play. Yeah. You know, so they would reach out and they're like, oh, you know, I want to do this and yada, yada, yada. Okay, cool. How do you feel about sex? How do you feel about this? And how do you feel about that? Because they hadn't thought about it. They hadn't thought about any of these different things. So there's a lot of, I mean, if you just do like a quick little Google search for like BDSM and self-assessment, there are so many little assessment tools that you can go through and pick which things you identify with or like or whatever. But that's actually a few steps ahead. You know, it really is kind of looking at like, what are you wanting within yourself? What are you wanting with your partner? If you have a partner, not all folks will have a partner when they want to get into this. You know, what do you know about the community? There are ways to do things. There are ways that you really don't want to do things. Pre-COVID days, it was a lot easier, I think, to try to connect with the BDSM community. You know, we have, I think, three dungeons. Well, we have two dungeons, so play spaces for BDSM. We were supposed to have three, but I don't know what happened to the third one because COVID. But I know of two. Doesn't mean there isn't another one that I don't know.
I was about to say, I only know of two, but that does not mean anything. So, I mean,
yeah.
It just means I don't know.
And that's just what we have locally. You know, almost every major city, you know, even in Wichita, Kansas, you know, they've got clubs. You know, sometimes it's just house parties, but they're out there. But ideally what you would do is you would go to fatlife.com, create a profile, and side note, anybody going to Fat Life, be prepared. You're going to see body parts, you're going to see stuff. So if it's a bit much for you, you may want to hold off on that one just yet. But, you know, you'd create a profile and you would connect with, I mean, whatever it is that you're into. So like, well, it's not open anymore, but we used to have a club called The Sanctuary. So a lot of the times what I do is I'd have clients go check the, you know, get on FetLife, go to The Sanctuary's page, you know, and find out when they're having munches. So a munch is a get together. It's a vanilla, just regular plain Jane get together where you meet other kinky folk, or people exploring. And you just kind of get to know each other, get a feel for, is this person a safe person before you go and get naked and let them do things to you?
Hang on. I'm going to ask a question. No. I want you to know that, like, I'm really glad that that's one of the first things that you mentioned, because a bunch of people think that, oh, you know, that somebody just jumped into this kink life and just all of a sudden now they're just out there in the parties and stuff. Most people do a lot of research before they jump into it.
Well, and it's very dangerous to just jump into it for multiple reasons. One, because you do need to have a certain level of trust with someone if you're going to let them pull a knife on you or beat you with something or, you know, let you beat them or any number of things. So there's that piece of the safety. You know, there's also, Have you had a conversation about STIs and boundaries? And, you know, is it okay to have sex? Just because you beat me doesn't mean you get to have sex with me.
I mean, exactly.
You know, BDSM is not always about sex. Some folks play to play.
That's something that I have to repeat like a lot. A lot. And I'm like, you can play and not worry. Yeah. You don't have to have sex. It's okay to play.
Oh, yeah. You know, and especially, and I kind of chuckle. So with folks in the community, and even some newbies, they'll want to do, quote, 24/7. You know, 24/7 BDSM, which is all day long. You know, you're always in scene, if you will, which not every time, a lot of that is not based on sex at all. It's, you know, duty driven. You know, you're going to text me, you're going to call me, you're going to do, you know, get my food, you're going to clean my house, you know, service. That's the word I was looking for, service. You know, so it can be around a lot of that. But anywho, let's see. So when I'm talking to clients about this, like I said, what is it that you're into? What is your partner looking for? And then being safe about it. Don't bring randos back to your house that you've never met before. Protect your identity, all of these things until you've had a chance to meet someone, trust them, whatever. Now, people do pick up play, which is you just go to a spot, you don't know the person, and you just sort of negotiate very quickly what it is that you're going to do. And hey, cool, if that works for you, by all means. Just again, you can still be safe and do pickup play. It's better to do pickup play in a public place than it is to do it in a private space, unless you're doing it with like somebody you do know, kind of thing. You know,
Well said. I hadn't thought of, you know what, whenever you said that, I was like, yeah, do I clarify? Yeah, I guess that is. That's good.
A lot of this is kind of basic dating stuff. Right. But then again, I'm also surprised at how many people don't necessarily always let people know where they are or other safety precautions.
Back to communication.
Yeah.
Sorry. It goes back to the communication part. Go ahead. So
I was going to say, it also can tie back in some with the shame piece because, you know, it's not generally acceptable to be kinky. There's a lot of misunderstanding around what it is. A lot of people automatically assume that it's abuse, which is absolutely, when done correctly, is not abuse at all. In fact, it's a very loving, compassionate, beautiful thing when done correctly. That spiritual thing even.
Yeah.
So here in the Dallas area, again, when it's not COVID, although I believe they did it this year, it just wasn't quite the same scale as it normally is. Here in the Dallas area, we have an event called Beyond Vanilla. It is I haven't gone in several years, but it is a fantastic place to go and learn a lot of sort of basic kinky stuff. There's kinksters from all over that come. Dossie Easton was even there 1 year when I went. It was so cool. I got to meet her. I did her class. I could dork out over there. It was awesome. It's so cool. Just her energy to be near her.
Yeah.
You know. you know, but yeah, they draw all kinds of amazing people who come in and teach so many classes about all kinds of different things. I mean, there was everything from, you know, being a parent and a kinkster at the same time. How to build your own kinky furniture, how to plan a scene, how to negotiate. Yes, negotiation on everything is key. That is one of the biggest things. We'll come back to that. But, you know, I mean, it just, I mean, you know, how to use a single tail whip and, you know, how to hog tie someone. They had a puppy play pit, which was my favorite to go and watch. So people who identify with puppies, who as a puppy, and so, you know, they'll crawl around on all fours and they might bark and they'll have an owner who will play with them and give them treats. And it's really fun to watch. Yeah. I'm sure it's fun to do, but I like to watch it.
yeah, There's so much about it that's nurturing in the community that people don't associate, that those individuals are getting nurtured. They're getting what they need, what they've asked for too. It's not a humiliation. It's a nurturing.
Well, I mean, there is that too.
No, there is humiliation. That's a separate thing though.
Yeah. There's still a lot of nurturing in all of it. And even when you do humiliation play, depending on what your aftercare looks like, there is probably a nice piece of, nurturing and care in that moment too. And so just as a side note, aftercare is when, after you're done with a scene, it's the things that you need to do to take care of yourself, because you just had crazy endorphin rushes and releases and all kinds of other fun stuff. So there'll oftentimes be sort of this drop, this sort of kind of letdown, and it can impact people in different ways. Some people get sleepy, some people get cranky. Not a good time to be having serious conversations. I always tell my clients, do not have serious conversations during aftercare. Yeah. Not the time. Sometimes there's going to be like an actual physical sort of my arms, my muscles are loose kind of thing, because, depending on what you're doing. And so when you do aftercare, it can be everything from just a glass of water, super basic, all the way up to I need to be snuggled for like 12 hours and I need all the food and I need a color and I need to, it can be whatever it is that makes you kind of feel closer to baseline again.
And that's negotiated before.
Yes, that should definitely be negotiated before. Yes. Don't wait till after the fact. You will regret it. Put that up front. Yes. Although keep in mind, if you're new, you're going to be expanding and learning as you go. So you may not know until you do that first scene, like what you want. Just plan on having water, a snack, maybe something soft and like a squishy blanket or a stuffy or something like that to just kind of snuggle and cuddle in case you need it. I'm sorry. There's something else I was going to say and I lost it. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, I do it all the time. Then I grab them back later. what is something that, as far as whenever you work with clients, do you let them kind of bring things to the table that they really want to explore? And then y'all talk about, say, for instance, a scene or something like that. Like I know I work with some clients on scenes to make sure that they're okay. Like, wait a minute, we're both participating. Or if like there's two or three, we're all participating in this. And does that make sense?
It depends on the folks. I had one couple once who came to me. I'm not going to get into the specifics of their dynamic, but one of them had initiated BDSM to keep a bad habit of theirs in check and sort of forced it on the other partner. Mm-hmm. And they had been doing this for several years before I got brought into the picture. And so by the time I got brought in, the one that was really kinky was really frustrated that they had to be the one to make all the decisions and moves and plans. And the one that was more vanilla was upset because their vanilla needs weren't being met. And so it was kind of trying to like marry those differences and get the kinky one being a little more vanilla and help the kinky or the vanilla one be more kinky. They wanted to be able to satisfy that need for their partner, but they didn't have any confidence and what they were being asked to do, because it was completely opposite of their personality. And they didn't know. So we did a lot of work on building confidence. And a lot of it didn't even have to do necessarily with BDSM, but at the same time, it did. And what was really neat, and what I loved about that particular person, it was so cool, because as they were learning how to do different things and they were working on their communication, watching their self-esteem, oh my God, this went from a person who wouldn't even go and drop off business cards somewhere to like just completely like social and doing things and just all kinds of good stuff. And it was just so cool to watch, you know, gaining that self-esteem through that, through that practice. It was so cool to watch.
And it's all, I love that. And I think that whenever they do kind of, I call it come into the middle, whenever they come to the table and it's that middle space and they're both kind of putting stuff on and taking stuff off, and we're working together to come up with that. I think that it's confidence on both sides and it's connection. I like whenever that person that's more vanilla says, this is what I want. Like I want, Very vanilla.
In situations where that vanilla person is like, I don't know if I want to do this, like that, I will tell them about a training I did at an ASECT conference with Midori. Midori is phenomenal. Oh my gosh.
I'm doing air half out.
But girl crush all the way. But anyway, she basically said that one of the beautiful things about BDSM is it's about play and it's light and you're coming together and it's like a dance. And she was like, when you dance, I'm probably going to butcher this, it's way better, but basically what she was saying is when you dance, you know, you each step in a certain pattern, in a certain routine. And if one person doesn't step or move, then you don't step or move. And that's what BDSM can be like, you know. And one of the things that I'll often tell people, I'm like, do you realize, so BDSM, kink, what have you, it's all based in power dynamics. Mm-hmm. You don't have a single relationship in your life where there is not a power dynamic. None. There is no space where it is 100% all the time equal. Never. It's not. Because even if you're trying to have a completely egalitarian relationship, at some point you're going to be sick and your partner's going to take care of you. Right. There is a power exchange there, you know. Maybe you cook, they clean, you know, or something, you know, it's all negotiated, but it's power exchange. And so a lot of the times when we're talking about that and people are like, oh my God, this is so scary. I'm like, it's really not. I mean, if you think about it, there's power exchange all around you all the time. You grew up watching it. If you grew up in a traditional air quote home where, you know, dad worked and mom stayed home and, you know, that's a power exchange, you know.
Correct.
Yeah.
But
you
they don't
you were the kid. Power exchange.
Yeah. They don't associate, you know, they associate the shame. Sorry.
Exactly. And oh, sorry about that. You know, one of the other things I talk about, because, you know, when they start talking about how they're uncomfortable with the idea of BDSM, you know, I am a sex therapist. So I do ask questions about sex and, you know, I'll ask permission to go into that. And a lot of the times I'll, you know, just ask, well, you ever, you know, gotten a little rough in sex, you know, maybe did it somewhere a little risque, you know, like outside in your car, you know, smack somebody's butt, call somebody daddy, whatever. I'm like, those are all components of BDSM. You're already kind of low-key doing a little, you know.
So doing a little anyway.
But and it's not because I'm trying to convince people to do it. What I'm trying to get people to understand is it's way more normal than we think it is.
Yeah.
Way more normal. Like, we do it all the time and half the time don't even freaking realize we're doing it, you know? And so why do we need to be ashamed of it? You know, if I don't think, you know,
all right. You know what? That's why I started Sex Gym, because I wanted to generate, that's what that means, is generate conversations about sex and healthy conversations. And, you know, looking at people who, you know, are very vanilla and people who like to play, you know, and people who have all different kinds, there's huge spectrums. And then saying, wait a minute, we got a lot of mixed stuff in here. Like this very vanilla, well, but you kind of like to be more dominant in the bedroom than you are. Maybe you don't like to be dominant with the bills. What's that? You know, and we start simple conversations. So I totally understand what you're saying with that. You start connecting it to the present and taking away the shame from it.
You know, I've had a couple, there's been a couple of couples that I've worked with where, you know, I'm listening to them talk about their stuff. One partner is saying, well, I want you to make all the decisions. I don't want to do this. I just want to take care of the house. You do everything else. And the other one, you know, I'm like, well, you guys kind of sound like you've already got a dynamic going on. This one wants to play a little. What if you were to just sort of splash a little like 50s household kind of kink in there? Because that's a big one. There's a lot of people who like that.
Yeah.
You know, what if you just did that? Play with it a little. You know, you're already, you know, and then there's another couple where it's kind of one of the partners was sort of identifying, they were doing some inner work around their inner child. And so they were finding, even in the stuff that they were doing some more, they were kind of acting out and behaving in sort of more juvenile ways. And I was like, well, why don't you tap into it? Maybe bust out a coloring book and see what happens. You know, tap into your inner little, you know, you didn't get to be little. So what if you got to do it now? You know, play with it a little. And it's really neat to watch, because what people don't realize is, you know, everybody talks about self-care and bath bombs and yoga. And, well, I mean, yoga is, I don't want to knock on that one. It is fantastic.
everybody's got their own body. Self-care.
But, you know, when you have this part of you, this inner child that's never been nurtured and loved, and you decide to let yourself access like little play, which is basically kind of being in the mindset of a child. And it can, and by child, I mean, it can be anywhere from like a teenager to like a tween to a younger. It's not about pedophilia or any of that.
No, we are not. These are consenting adults who choose to work on inner child work.
Exactly. And yeah, but when you're in that, it's a beautiful opportunity to let you heal and nurture that part of yourself that never got that. Especially if you happen to have a partner who is really nurturing and loving at the same time, that it is so healing for so many people, that component, you know, and it really plays into attachment theory, and it's really neat. Like when you just sit and kind of peel back all the layers, you know.
People can actually take the attachment theory and they can start to heal and do some rebonding. And it can be beautiful for people.
Well, and it's funny because, like, I read Sue Johnson's Hold Me Tight. Is that the one with the seven conversations? I'm sorry, I bet my bookshelf beside me. I was trying to see if I could find it.
I don't know. I think I've got being clitorate and sexual outliners in front of me. So, and girl sex.
but in Hold Me Tight, you know, she talks a lot about different conversations and things that are, you know, meant to heal like a couple, because Sue Johnson's work is meant just for couples. It's not meant for like multiple people. Although I really think it can be. And one of these days I want to adapt some stuff so it can be for like consensual non-monogamy, because I love these conversations. Anywho. Some of the same concepts that she talks about there, and, you know, and being able to heal, what does she call it? She doesn't call it attachment injuries, but it's basically what it is. You know, when you've broken a trust or you've hurt somebody, and, a lot of that can also totally be healed through some of these BDSM relationships and scenes.
Yes. Because and now I'm going to have to look that up because I can't find it. So I can put it in there. It's going to drive me crazy. Go ahead. Sorry.
but so you can learn how to trust and to connect and feel safe, you know? Now that's where ultimately, like, being really honest with yourself and being really honest with your partner is so important. You know, I've had some folks who have actually healed their relationship in large part, I think, due to BDSM, because it forces them to talk more. You can't do these things and not talk. You have to negotiate, you know, and negotiation is so important. I can't stress enough. And it drives me bonkers, especially when I see seasoned players. Oh, I don't need to negotiate. Yes, you do. Just because your partner consented to something once does not mean that they're consenting to it forever. You know,
air snaps.
You know, and it doesn't mean that maybe there's other things I want to do, and maybe I don't want you to do it quite like that anymore. And there's a lot of different things to take into consideration with that. But what was I going to say? Negotiation. So with negotiation, a lot of my clients, they'll say, do we need a contract, Liz? And I'm like, well, I'm a giant nerd, so I'm all about like written junk and all of that. I'm like, yes, totally. But in all seriousness, especially if you're new, I do highly recommend, whether it's consensual non-monogamy or BDSM, whatever it is that we've negotiated and agreed to, put that shit in writing. Put it in writing. Please put it in writing. I don't know how many sessions have been arguments over, well, you said I couldn't have sex with someone. I gave him a blowjob. That's not sex. No, people, define stuff. Define stuff.
No, yeah. I'm so with you on that. And also, some people who come into it new and they don't understand that, like, oh, wait, like, the person that I'm playing with, and, you know, I'm thinking of dom sub situation, whenever they choose to, am I supposed to respond no matter if that's something that I really didn't want to do? Is that what being a submissive is? And that whole conversation can be very traumatic, and it can cause a lot of damage. You were going to say something. Mm-hmm. I can tell it was coming out of your head.
The other thing I was going to say is, you know, I'd say probably shoot, at least a third of my clients, if not more, have ADHD. ADHD brains don't work with, like, anybody with any kind of executive dysfunction is not going to just remember everything. You know, you're going to have to, like, write that stuff down, because what's going to wind up happening is that we'll go with the sub-dom dynamic. Mm-hmm. That dom is going to get so irritated with the sub, assuming the sub is the one with the executive dysfunction. They're going to get so annoyed because you don't remember what you're supposed to do. You're undermining my authority. Why are we even doing this? I don't know how many times I have seen that. And on the flip side, I've seen many subs get really irritated with their dom because you're not doing what you agreed to do. You're supposed to blah, 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 and you're just letting me get away with murder. What the hell is that? You know, and
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sorry.
I was going to say also in here, I want us to also dive into people taking care of themselves and knowing when to reach out and safety and what language to use. Because sometimes if you are new to it, you come out of it and you say, well, but I was supposed to. And then nobody knows, like, oh, wait a minute. You know what I'm saying? So, like, how do you as a clinician kind of decipher some of that language?
So and actually, thank you for that, because that triggered something that I completely forgot to mention, and that's safe words. You know, before you even play, like, you know, in the negotiation phase, you should absolutely agree on a safe word. And as much as people want it to be something fun and silly and off the wall, if you're new, you really shouldn't do that. You really should do like a stoplight system is what I encourage my clients to do. So if you're really new and you're like learning a skill and you're really kind of anxious about it, my go-to on that is green, do more. I like that. Yellow, I don't know about this. Can we pause and sort of like, you know, maybe a little lighter, maybe some more to the left, something. I need to wiggle my arm. And red is stop. That doesn't mean stop exactly in the moment, or excuse me, it doesn't mean just back off. Like, let's say you're in the middle of like a rope scene. You don't just let go of the rope. You stop tying. You check in with the person. What do they need? Do they need you to immediately release them? Do they need, you know, what's going on in this moment? Because sometimes if you just back off, you're going to hurt somebody really bad. So that needs to be negotiated too. But usually if red is called, that means we're done. We'll process afterwards, and always, always, always process after a scene. Always. You know, you discuss what went well, what didn't go well, what could we do to make this better?
Okay. As clinicians, let's just be honest. How many couples do you have that come in and say, oh, hey, those are my dogs. I'm just wondering if one more noise can go off today. This has been crazy.
Dogs, they'll do.
How many couples that have been together for 20 years, do they process after sex? I don't have a whole lot that come in.
Well, I got a couple right now that do, and I'm really proud of them.
I'm proud of them because I do not have that conversation as much. And that's one of the things that I have found about this community that I wish we would pull over and take some of the shame away from it and get some of these people who are in these relationships that they feel scared to say something in, you know?
Now, the thing that I do a lot is inevitably with a lot of my clients, they're all a bunch of people pleasers. I don't care if they're a dom or a sub, they're people pleasers. And they are scared to death to tell their partners the honest truth. And the thing is, in BDSM, you have to tell the truth. If you're a sub or a dom, either one of them, and you're putting up with something that you don't actually care for, all you're doing is building resentment. And at some point, that's just going to explode. And it's not going to be pretty at all. So you want to be honest. You want to talk about it. You want to find a way. You know, one of my favorite like couple exercises is if there's a communication error of some kind, whether it's, you know, we panic at what the other one is saying, or I'm a slow processor. And so I can't just rapid fire get out what it is that I need to say to you. I got to think on it for a minute. Is I like to have people keep a shared like Google Drive or Google Doc, something, but it's meant to be like a journal. And so partner will go in and they'll write whatever it is that they're feeling. And the other one can go in and read it. They don't have to immediately respond. And then when they're ready, they can if they want to, but they don't have to, you know? And so that can be a great tool in these situations where I'm afraid I'm going to hurt his feelings if I tell him that I didn't like how he did it, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, that's good.
And put it in there. And you don't have to look at him when you say it, you know. I don't like how she pulled my hair. She didn't do it right. Which, by the way, there is a method to pulling hair, people. You don't pull it by the end. You pull it by the base.
My God. Thank you. Yes, 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 yes. By the base. By the base. By the base. Nothing. That base. What did you say? It blocked it out. I'm so sorry. What did you say?
I said nothing like toddlers to teach you the wrong way to pull hair.
Okay. I want us to make sure that we pick up. So if we have, and this is, I want to make sure not to take up too much of your time because I know you're busy. If we have a dom sub situation, we'll just use that as an example where they don't have enough information where they feel like they can say or voice something and they happen to be listening to this podcast. What's a good thing? Like I tell my clients, I'll give you an example. I tell my clients, you know, like if whenever you're in the middle of a scene or playtime and like everything and you can't be present and like your stomach is uncomfortable, kind of the same stuff that we talk about, you know, like in relationships and with conversations. But if you cannot be present and you also feel like you have to act like something else, like you can't, and it's not play being something else. it's just
in the moment and like forcing yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like how do you help clients really have a voice with getting out of those situations?
So when I'm working with folks and honestly, it doesn't matter if it's BDSM or just regular vanilla sex or going to the movies, it doesn't really matter. But what the scene is, you know, one is really working with folks on like getting to know themselves, getting present in their bodies, grounding into their own bodies, first and foremost. And then secondly, is each of the partners learning what it looks like when whichever partner is having trouble. Sometimes it's both, you know, at different times, sometimes it's the same time, but it's both of them learning what the other one looks like when they're not in a good place so that they can each be checking in with each other. You know, but also owning their own stuff. If I'm not able to be present in the middle of a scene, then I don't belong in that scene. I don't. I'm going to get hurt or I'm going to hurt my partner. I'm going to violate trust. Because here's the thing. If I sit there through that scene and I act like I'm okay with it, my partner doesn't know that maybe my boundaries were actually violated. I might not know that my boundaries were violated if I'm not actually present in that scene. And so it's so important that if you're not truly in it, don't do it. postpone, reschedule. I mean, even if you just put it off for like 20 minutes and go take a shower and just, you know, clear your head for a second, you know, what do you got to do to like reconnect? I've worked with some folks who they will do, I've got them doing like mindfulness practices together before a scene, you know, mm-hmm. sort of like a, let's just connect sort of thing. And a lot of times that can be helpful too. But a lot, it's just really getting to know yourself and like what's up and not pushing yourself past your limit. Really listen to yourself. It's so important to listen to your body.
I think that whenever someone listens to themselves and connects with themselves in an autonomy way, in a, you know, being as an autonomous person, then it does allow them to have that choice to connect with another human. And it's just such a beautiful gift to yourself if you can enjoy that, you know, and to the other person, of course, mm-hmm. but enjoying that scene because you enjoy it, not because somebody else is telling you have to enjoy it. And that's
there are a lot of people who service and pleasing others is their kink. That's what makes them feel good. But the thing is, and I have to work really hard with some folks on this, especially people who suffered a lot of trauma, mm-hmm. not at your expense. If I really get off on making you happy and making sure all of your needs are met, and that, you know, and I feel like my needs don't necessarily matter, that's not good, because that means I'm not taking, you know, you have to take care of you to take care of other people, plain and simple. And that's in any situation. As a therapist, if I'm not staying on top of my self-care, I can't be present for my clients. As a mom, if I'm not staying on top of my self-care, I can't be there for my kids. I'm a crap mom. That's no fun, you know? And I can't be there for a submissive or a top or whatever if I'm not taking care of myself.
Correct. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I completely agree. Oh my goodness. I didn't even like... You're an awesome person to talk to. I appreciate it so much. This journey of doing this podcast has been so neat because it's really opened up my eyes to that there are just these great humans that are out there helping, you know, other people accept and be comfortable with themselves, you know, just the way they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love that. I love that. That's what my practice is about too. And I love it.
The one last thing, because I feel like we're getting to a close, the one last thing I want to make sure that we touch on is one of the beautiful, beautiful things about BDSM is it's so creative. And so if I'm getting to a point where my body can't handle being in a certain position, doing a certain thing, that's okay, because BDSM gives me the opportunity to still be sexy and fun and all these fun, spunky things that most everybody wants to be, especially in the bedroom. But it's okay, because I can find a different way to do something. You know,
I like
and it's
that.
A lot of the time, and sometimes it's a little bit easier, you know, if my body isn't functioning, like, it, then, you know, there's all kinds of intellectual kink stuff too. And there's all kinds of other things. And there's different ways to embrace, you know, sexuality and connection that, you know, it's so neat. Oh, and the other last thing for my newbies, I always recommend everybody check out the book. I think it's called Spare Me the Roses, I Want the Thorns, or Give Me the Thorns, something like that.
You know what? I'll always put that one in there because that's a good one.
Yeah. When I very first learned about it, that was the first book that was easy to digest. It wasn't scary. Mm-hmm. Hell, it looks like a workbook. I mean, you wouldn't know if you just saw it on a shelf, you wouldn't know. You know, but it covers everything. There's a little bit of everything in there. And I like that because, like, what, you know, I love Dossie Eason and Janet Hardy. They're fantastic. But the Better Topping and Better Bottoming books can be a little scary for somebody who's sort of
a newbie.
A little intimidating. You know, they're good books though, really good books, but they can be a little intimidating. This is a good, like, neutral, sort of safer space. There's pictures and diagrams, kind of tells you a little bit about how to do stuff and all that other stuff. But yeah.
That's good. No, I'm glad that you did bring that up. And it, well, is there anything else that, because we've talked about, I'm so glad that in the, you kind of intertwined all this stuff that I had questions about, which is excellent. Because I enjoyed.
You were glad you could follow me.
I know. And I'm, man, we made it through a lot of like technology stuff today too. I'm proud that we got yeah, it's been one. But I think that it, what I am hearing across the board is kind of what I do love in a lot of the classes that I do, you know, with ASIC and with also some of the outside schools that I've used. I think that it's so important to meet someone exactly where they're at and to find out if they understand who they are. And if you understand who you are, then you can figure out what kind of play y'all can have together. But if those things aren't established, then it's unsafe, you know, to really proceed until you can kind of figure out that fundamental stuff, I guess, is a good way to say it. But if you're wanting to play, there's so much information out there. And so it's important to look and to find out how. And that's why I kind of wanted to this is just the start, you know, of a conversation, because there's so much, there's absolutely no way for us to talk about everything in Keek and there's just no way. Not in an hour podcast.
No. After that.
Yeah.
But there, oh, and just one, I'm sorry, there was one other thing. I completely forgot about it. Here in the DFW area, I think there's one in Chicago and there are a couple other places, but there are training programs. So like, if you want to be a dominant, you want to be a submissive, there's a year long program. I can't remember the name of it, but I'm pretty sure if you just Google like BDSM training Dallas, I can't remember what it's called, but it's not hard to find.
Yeah. I have a list, but you can just Google it. You know, I just always Google it and look it up because I'm terrible with names. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, and one last shameless plug. The National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. Beautiful, amazing resource. It's ncsfreedom.org. I bring that up because some of the things that they do is they do a lot of advocacy work, both in like the legal system. So like if somebody reports you to CPS because you're kinky and something crazy is going on there, you can call in CSF. They've got resources to help you in that situation. If you're going through a funky, nasty divorce and your partner's trying to like smear you because you're kinky, they've got resources that can help you. They also do a ton of research and surveys about like folks in the community. I believe right now they've been working on trying to help with like some kind of legislative stuff. I can't remember what that's called, but
they are very active.
They've also got a hotline that you can call if you've been assaulted within the community, especially because a lot of folks, if they've been assaulted, don't feel safe going to the police. And I can't say that I blame them. It's unfortunate. But they do have a hotline that you can call. They can provide you with support. They can help you get to some resources and things. They are also keeping sort of like a, I don't know exactly what it's called, but if there is a violation in your community, you can call them and they will actually send people out to the community to help sort of educate and train about consent and things. They've got a lot of really good stuff. They've also got the Kink Aware Professionals list. So if you need a lawyer, a therapist, a massage therapist, just anybody professional. And if you are someone who is a Kink Aware Professional and you're not on that list, go get yourself on it. It's free. It's free marketing. Go do the thing.
I don't know that I'm on there, to be honest. I know I'm on the ASIC one.
They updated their website, I think, a year or two ago. So all the old listings, I think, were imported, but you have to go claim it and fix it and all of that other junk. So if you had one on there at one point, and I'm chuckling because I don't know that I've done that so far. I keep meaning to, and I keep forgetting about it.
Yeah. But Okay, so I'll link them down below since that's important to you. And I'll also link, just for the listeners, I will also link Liz's in Richardson, and I will link her location, her website. They have some other good counselors there, and it sounds like they're phenomenal. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do, was start a conversation about how we can get people in healthy places and have healthy conversations about sex.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that I got to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. My pleasure. I appreciate you taking that crazy. Hey, so by the way, I'm a sex therapist in Carrollton. Email. and going with it. I appreciate it. I will link some of the things that Liz has talked about below. And I'll also put a little snippet of her bio. And I will also put it on Twitter, and I'll put it on Facebook so you guys can listen to it. I appreciate it so much. And I look forward to maybe chatting again one time. This is Melinda, and you guys have a great day. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope it provided some information for you. Please remember that this is not a therapy session, nor is it meant to provide therapy for anyone. Although I am a therapist, this is just generating a conversation and starting to understand the dynamics of sex and intimacy. If you have any questions or you feel like you're overwhelmed and need assistance, please make sure to reach out to your therapist. Or if you have a life or death fear, please make sure to call 911. Thank you so much for joining us, and we see you next time on Sex Gen.